Next, I want to talk about implementing an emergency field hospital. This is what I do on a day-to-day basis and what I'm passionate about. So an emergency field hospital, in my mind, is a mobile medical missions hospital. It's something that goes into areas that have no functioning hospital and provides an excellent high level of care that you could otherwise not achieve in the name of Christ. In this lecture, I want to talk about the system that we use in the emergency field hospital. Talk about the leadership that you have to have to help these teams in the emergency field hospital. Some other key characteristics: maintaining high standards, cooperation with the host government, and also at the end, generosity. As we talked about multiple times, April 16th, 2016, there was a 7.2, I believe, earthquake in Ecuador. This was a regional disaster. It didn't get a lot of news coverage, but it was an absolute disaster for those involved. Over 2 million people had their homes and everything destroyed. And when we arrived in Ecuador, we found a hospital that looked like this. This was the Napoleon de Villa Regional Hospital. This was the place that they sent all their cases that they couldn't handle in all the other towns. They sent their orthopedic procedures. They sent their worst trauma. And this is what it looked like after the earthquake. So we were invited to come down, and on arrival, we were assigned to this area, an area of 117,000 people. It was, like I said, a former referral hospital that had been destroyed. And we decided to deploy a full field hospital. That included initially over 50 medical and technical personnel. Around 30 of those were doctors and nurses and medical personnel, but it takes a significant quantity, as Dr. Gettle was saying, a significant quantity of technical people, biomed people, laboratory technicians, x-ray technicians, everything that you would find in a normal U.S. hospital on a smaller scale. We left Greensboro, North Carolina, and arrived on site within 5 hours, drove to the site overnight, got there about 1 a.m., and the next day began working and had a functional hospital up within 11 hours. This is the hospital as it existed in Ecuador. 14-bed ER, the capacity of seeing 100 patients per day. We had 30 beds at the time, inpatient capacity, post-op capacity, and one OR, which on a very good day had capacity of 7 major cases. And we had space for 64 staff that could stay on site. Not only medical staff, not only technical staff, but also staff of all the different sectors that we've been talking about came and went and did distributions out of this site. And quickly, the results, some of the results we saw from that. We served for 2 months as the primary referral hospital. When we got there, the Ecuadorian Ministry of Health said, "We want you with your specialist to be our referral center. We want to send everyone else to you. We'll take care of the basic outpatient needs. Anyone that's sick goes to you." And we had about 1,400 emergency referrals coming in by ambulance during that time. And over 300 surgeries were performed. The vast majority of those major surgeries, orthopedic surgeries, and significant trauma surgeries, as Dr. Cheatham can attest to. The hospital, at the end of the deployment, we were operating it for 2 months. At the end of the deployment, it was handed over to the Ministry of Health. We gave everything to the Ministry of Health. And that hospital is still operating today. It's operating for the next 2 years as the major referral center in the region by the Ecuadorian staff there. And not to jump ahead, but I just want to share a neat story. The Minister of Health herself showed up within the first few days, and I remember her looking at me and saying, "You do know I did my studies in Moscow, don't you? I've seen a lot of groups like you." And I was taken aback. We worked together, but she was very standoffish. At the end of the deployment, she came back and said, "You're leaving this here. Why are you leaving this here? This makes no sense. Why are you leaving this here?" Oh, that was the biggest opportunity we had. Oh, let me tell you about my Savior and why we're really doing this. And we were able to minister to her and all of her staff there, and say, and it was a huge open door for the message we want to bring every time we deploy. Spiritual impact. There's a couple of little stories here. The man you see on your right, this gentleman came in one night after ingesting bleach and lye, trying to kill himself. This gentleman was at the end of his line, tried to end his life. We had him intubated with every tube we could, with every monitor we could, given all the medications we could, the most intensive management we could. And in about 3 days, he started to come around. And I thought, you know, this guy's esophagus, it's going to be scarred down totally. But it wasn't, by the grace of God. And about 3 days after that point, he was sitting in our morning devotions. And he said something to me I'll never forget. He said, "I'm so glad I did this to myself. Because if I wouldn't have come here, I never would have heard about Jesus Christ, and I never would have had a new heart." And I'll always remember that. The lady on the left here is a patient that became a legend in our staff. This lady had came in on death's doorstep with necrotizing fasciitis of her leg. She ended up getting intubated. She had to have an amputation. She had a long, long course, but throughout the entire thing, we were able to minister to her and her family, and her and her family all came to Christ through this event. I'm going to talk a little bit about the nuts and bolts so you sort of see under the hood of this kind of field hospital and the program that we built at Samaritan's Purse. This is a picture of the cockpit of our DC-8, and this is always a reminder to me, as pilots often do, the checklist and the process is more important than the product you put out in the end. The devil's in the details, as they say, in every little detail, checking off the right thing, doing the right thing. Everyone sees the big thing, but really what happens is because of thousands of little decisions that are made. Again, the Emmett Dart structure, we are only able to do this because of a proven system that has the Emmett and the Dart on the field, and we were able to put our medical component within it. One of the biggest first obstacles is evaluating the need. In this rudimentary graph, you can see the severity of the sudden onset disaster on the bottom and the income of the country on the top. You can see things like moderate level disasters in a high-income country like Katrina, or earthquakes in Chile, or what happened in Haiti in 2010. These are some of the factors that go into the process, the thinking behind whether or not we deploy an emergency field hospital. Like we talked about earlier, speed is one of the most important things. The loss of life after an acute onset disaster is within 48 to 72 hours. Some authors say if you don't arrive by 72 hours, you might as well stay home. Our job is to get there as soon as possible, and we're able to do that with the resources that Samaritan's Purse can now do. The problem, very few organizations make this window. As you can see here on day 5 in this recent disaster is when there was a spike of beds. That's far too long. And this quote, "None of the 43 field hospitals arrived early enough to provide emergency trauma care." And that's very telling. And this is not about perfection. We try to be appropriate, but we're not perfect. We focus more on speed than perfection. And one of my favorite sayings is lifted from the Navy SEALs, "Slow is smooth and smooth is fast." Emergency medicine has taken that. It means you make the first decision slow. You make the next decision. You stay smooth, and you're the first one there. You're the fastest there. In a disaster, the worst decision is no decision. And unfortunately, the decisions have to be made with 80% of the information, and that's a luxury. Lives don't wait for the assessment. You can read this quote from one of the best in this business, the Israeli Field Hospital, Dr. Marin. But the one that I was struggling with earlier that I like even better is the quality of our work is the platform of our witness. And in these medical responses, speed is quality. This is one of the ways we provide speed. The DC-8 aircraft with healing in Jesus' name written on the nose of that thing. It's ready for rapid deployment worldwide and is able to deploy within hours, can carry 40 tons and 32 passengers. We filled it up in both ways. For instance, right now in Haiti, it's made 6 trips in the last 7 days. It has 3 trips every morning until Monday when it goes to Liberia. It's a wonderful tool. And Samaritan's Purse is making great use of it. But one of the biggest things of keeping focused is prioritization. You have to go through these things and prioritize every single thing, because my goal in putting a field hospital out there is not that me and you are comfortable and we feel nice. It's that we get a functional unit that can do emergency surgical management or emergency medical management there as soon as possible to deal with the need. The focus is that we always have to be able to deploy a hospital in one flight, which we hear 20, 40 tons, that's a lot, but it's about 40 pallets. And you can imagine even putting a small hospital in the United States in 40 pallet space is incredibly difficult. And as many people in this audience can attest, when we got there the first day, we weren't that comfortable. We were sleeping in patient wards. We were doing everything we could to be able to get there first and take care of the people, and everything else came second. And the question you always have to ask yourself is, what is really necessary when people are dying? Like I said, uncomfortable, but you have to intentionally pack for the appropriate responses, with the goal of having our wheels up in 24 hours once we get the go-ahead to deploy. You can see here, this is the DC-8 being packed. These are the actual items we sent to Ecuador and how they were loaded onto the airplane at that time. Secondly, after speed is applicability. We want to bring the right need to the right situation. There's international standards. The WHO marks certain field hospitals now after Haiti as certain standards. There's level 1, level 2, level 3. But they all talk about size, the time that you have to stay on the field. They want people to stay longer than a few weeks, as some hospitals do, because the disaster is not just the disaster. The disaster is the effects it has on the medical institutions and all the people that have nowhere else to go after that. And then, as Dr. Gettle said very well, the medical needs change during the deployment. And this is a graph to show that. Number one is the acute trauma needs. Number two is the post trauma needs, the infections because of the trauma. But number three, just a few days after earthquakes, are the spiking infectious diseases. And then weeks later, the accumulated elective care needs that are always present. And if we're going to be appropriate in what we do, we have to intentionally plan for each one of these. Samaritan's Purse system. This is a system that's new, but we always focus on the two big needs: the ability to scale, scalability, so a disaster becomes larger, we're able to scale with it, and the ability to be rapid, to be there, hopefully first on the scene, to help the people that are in most need. The inventory of equipment, which we call durables, consumables, which are medical supplies, and pharmaceuticals, are all pre-packaged, pre-labeled, and ready to go in multiple different ways to the field within a moment's notice. Because there's no time to pack. We have to be scalable, and we also have to be flexible. First off, scalability. This is what we call our main four hospitals that we send out: Tier 1, Tier 2 medical, Tier 2 surgical, and Tier 3. A Tier 1 is an OPD. It's an outpatient department. It's an ER in the States. We can see 100 patients a day. They come and they go, and no one gets hospitalized. A Tier 2 medical, you add medical wards to that. You can take care of cholera, meningitis, whatever it might be. You can take care of those things. The Tier 2 surgical is what you saw in Ecuador. One OR, the ability to do the 7 patients a day, 7 cases a day of acute care injuries. We deploy that to smaller scale disasters in the Tier 3, which is the largest thing we have. We've never had to deploy yet, but have plans to do that in the future if the need arises. But it also has to be modular, or it has to be flexible. We call it modular. So this is a sneak peek. This is the new hospital design. It's built in modules. So we can now, we don't have to send out a full hospital. You may be called upon to go out whenever. We're just sending out modules. Why send out a whole hospital when all you need is an ER, or all you need is a patient ward to take care of cholera, or all you need is an OR? Because you're at a mission hospital that has everything else. So there, we can respond in many, many different ways. Leadership, just a basic few slides about some of the importances of leadership during these crises. We have a mandate. We're always given a mandate in DART, and that is you can do this, you focus on this, but you can't do X, Y, and Z. Right now in Haiti, we're focusing on cholera. We're treating cholera. We'd like to become a hospital, but we're not a hospital. We're focused on cholera. That's all we're doing. That's our mandate. And we all have to be very cognizant of that and sensitive to that mandate. We always have to navigate complexities with patients. On these sites, there's many organizations, and they don't always have the same priorities. Some priorities align with ours, some don't. And we have to be sensitive to those and navigate those. Once again, the decision-making, 80% is always a luxury. We make decisions based upon far less information than that. And above and beyond everything else, if you go out with us, integrity is not optional. It's the most important thing. These are just my thoughts of a team. This is what I saw in Ecuador. I was blown away. Kenny Isaacs actually said when we got back, it was one of the best teams he had ever been a part of, that initial team that was in Ecuador. And to have that, you have to set the bar higher than what you think is possible. When you select people like this who are passionate and dedicated and serve with minimal self, and you set the bar high, they go far and above what you think is ever possible. And as I said at the bottom, sometimes it's best to just unite, have good communication, and get out of the way, because these people can do their job better than you can. Here's some examples of these people. Henry Smoke, one of our ER doctors, who was just an amazing guy, worked in Tampa General for 30 years, could run circles around everybody else at his age, and blew us away with his compassion on a day-to-day basis. Kelly Seitz, who you'll hear speak tomorrow, and the compassion she showed to each and every one of her patients was mind-blowing. Here you see Lee McCluskey praying with a patient, taking time away from a busy surgical schedule, and a guy like me who's always saying, oh, there's another surgical patient, there's someone else that has arrived, you need to move. We need to move along to do exactly that, which is the most important thing. I love this picture. It seems like a simple picture of people putting up tents, but in this picture you'll see Ecuadorian military, you'll see biomedical technicians, anesthesiologists, doctors, nurses, construction personnel, all the technical personnel, they're all doing the same thing. They're setting up that tent. Because when you're out in a DART, it's never not my job. Tent needs to get set up, not my job. No, that doesn't work. It's never not my job. It's everybody's job. And all down that line is all kinds of different people from all kinds of different backgrounds serving without self involved. And again, 11 hours from the time we arrived to the time we had a functional hospital, a full-scale functional surgical hospital up and running, and that's one of the things I'm most proud about. This is a picture from the internal structure of our ER. Maintaining high-quality care. We have to balance quality versus capacity. We can't take everything we want. We want to provide the best quality care for every patient, but in reality, we have to provide the best quality of care for all the patients in front of us. If there's 1,000 patients, you have to select, you have to triage appropriately. We continually, every single day at Samaritan's Purse, do careful research and development on the appropriate equipment and supplies for these settings. Ultrasounds, X-ray units that can be packed into tiny boxes and do anything we need, lab equipment, OR equipment, specific sign nail sets, Jex Fix sets, certain things that are appropriate to our environment that we have to find and seek out. And small things make big differences. I like the equipment. I like the neat things. But the truth is, what makes more difference than anything are things like checklists, communications, handoffs. Every one of us know how to do those things. And it allows us to do incredibly technical things like this. This is Lee McCluskey and Tony DeBari, who you'll hear speak tomorrow, doing surgery on a patient. Above, you can see our x-ray unit. Looks pretty rudimentary, but it provided amazing pictures and quality that we couldn't otherwise have found. You'll see other things you don't see in the United States. Dr. McCluskey with a wrap around a drill. The wrap's been sterilized. The drill bit's been sterilized. The chuck's been sterilized. The rest is covered. We don't have to bring incredibly high dollar medical equipment to get the job done. We get the job done with what we have. And we also have to be self-sufficient. You can't walk into a disaster zone saying, okay, I'm hungry, I need some water. You have to bring your water, your capacity, your food, your electricity, everything with you. On the left, you'll see actually what we call a RO unit. It stands for reverse osmosis unit. That thing is on its way to Haiti right now. It pulls water out of the ocean and provides us clean drinking water. And the importance of other sectors. We don't work in a vacuum. It's a hospital, and when you're there, all you see is hospital and sick people, but we don't work in a vacuum. We have people that are providing water. We have people that are providing NFIs, non-food items like tarps and hygiene kits, and we have people that are providing shelter amongst many other things. And you always, in the words of Stephen Covey, you have to keep the main thing the main thing. And the spiritual focus is the main thing. We may be excited, we're rushing into disasters, we see people with arms and legs blown off and we're trying to help them, but this is the main thing. This is the reason we go. Evangelism, prayer with and for the patients, and involving those Operation Christmas Child churches. There were well over 100 individuals who came to faith in Christ during this time, and we were able to hand them right over to a church who was able to start ministering to them on a daily basis because of those connections. Cooperation. On the left, you'll see a picture of one of our nurses handing over our hospital. This was done over a 10-day period, but we taught them everything that we had and left everything that we could. This is a nurse who is showing them exactly how we used our medications, ran our wards, and in this instance, the ER. And on the right, cooperation with the military. The military is absolutely wonderful to work with in most every instance that I've been involved in. That helicopter you see there, they flew reconnaissance for us, and we were able to fly around. As we take off, I'm in the helicopter, and they see that I'm a little nervous. And they reassure me, it's not going to crash. It's a 1983 French helicopter. I felt much better after that. And generosity. On the left, you'll see Jim Moore, telling them how to use a surgical table, how to break it down, how to rebuild it, how to troubleshoot things, our head biomedical technician. On the far right, the trauma surgical team, who were ecstatic over a place to practice. Their hospital had been destroyed, and they just wanted to help their own people. And in the middle, I can't overestimate this enough, the generosity of leaving the hospital for them to continue this work opened up massive doors of ministry. The title reads, "The Samaritan's Purse, They Returned Without Tools," which in their culture was really unheard of. Multiple articles, multiple instances to speak and to share the name of Christ, because not only were we selfless in our behavior, we were selfless with our things also. And we left them there for the people to help take care of themselves. Because of the proof given by this ministry, they will glorify God for your obedience to your confession of the gospel of Christ and for the liberality of all the contribution to them and to all. If you look on Google Earth today, you'll see General Hospital of Chone. It sits right there where those tents are in what was a field in March of last year. This is just the last slide. This is a picture that I'm incredibly proud of. There's many of you guys in this room who are part of this team, And I'm eternally grateful for each and every one of your hard work. And I invite anyone else who is interested at all in serving in this kind of a capacity and serving the least of our brothers and sisters when they're fallen in the ditch of life and help pick them up to see me, Dr. Gettle, or HR representatives downstairs and come be a part of this team. I thank you guys.